You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
What, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Well, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. Feel it, you feel it?
It's a faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who? A fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of Doctor Who universe. Hold tight. You never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Who are you?
I'm glad you asked that again. Bit of adrenaline, dash of outrage, and a hint of panic knitted my brain back together. I know exactly who I am. I'm the Doctor. Sorting out fair play throughout the universe. Now please, get off this planet. While you still have a choice.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. That's right, folks. We are back after that wonderful trip to Grahamland last time. Thank you for enjoying it. Thank you for the comments we got. Thank you for getting the April Fool's joke we gave you guys last time. I think everybody needed a little bit levity with what's going on in the world right now. And it was Graham. So it was awesome. You know, Mike Gordon was ready to talk all about Graham again this week. So
wait,
you know.
It was a joke? What?
Yeah. What? Wait a minute.
That's
crazy.
No. Come on, man.
Hey.
The people are listening.
Hey,
man.
That's one of our highest rated shows ever.
One of our highest rated shows. Hey, Mike and Mary, April Fools. It was a joke. We're not doing Earth Station Graham.
I am crushed.
But we're going to talk about David Tennant tonight.
Woo! Yeah.
So, wow, that didn't take much. We are going to be talking all about 42 from the third season of New Doctor Who, because it was the second season with David Tennant, and it was a fun story. And it is a Chris Chibnall story, folks. That's right. We get more Chris Chibnall. Just, you know, what you guys were waiting for, I'm sure. But we have, you know, Mike and Mary here. Hey, guys, how are you tonight?
Hello, it is fantastic to be here.
Howdy.
Everything going okay? You surviving all right?
So far, so good.
Yep, we're here.
We're here. Okay, that's good. We don't have anywhere else to be, so why not?
We're just going to be here.
Exactly.
So forever.
It just almost feels like. You know, it almost feels like Groundhog Day. You know,
get up, watch CNN.
Exactly. Watch Doctor Who again. You know, read some comics, play a video game, go to bed, get up the next morning, do the same thing. So it's not terrible, but you know, it should be kind of cool. But we hope you guys at home are doing well also. So we are going to be talking all about 42, and we have a guest with us. We actually have our friend Jenna Silverstein here. Welcome.
Hey, Mikey. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back. Welcome to Earth Station Who. Is this your first time on the podcast?
Earth Station Who? I think so.
Yes, because we've had you on Earth Station 1 twice already.
That is true.
And so it's really awesome to have you. You want to tell everyone a little bit about your geek cred and your history with Doctor Who?
Oh my gosh. Well, my geek cred goes back a long time. For 10 years, I was an acquisitions editor at Bantam Spar, which was the science fiction imprint at what now Random House Books. So I've edited science fiction for years and years. I've edited books for Wizards of the Coast, which produces Magic the Gathering. I've edited books for Cobalt Press, which is a role-playing game company. I've been watching science fiction movies since I was a kid. I'm a Star Trek fan. From the time I was 6 years old, I came to Doctor Who through New Who and completely fell in love with the series starting there. And I've been watching ever since.
Did you ever watch any of the old Who, or is it just you're specifically New Who?
I'm really a New Who girl. I've tried to watch I've seen some older episodes. I've tried to re-get into it. I haven't attached to it as much as I have New Who.
Ah, we might have to strap you down to a chair and, you know, take you all the way from the beginning.
Dude, don't taunt me that way.
Yeah, you know, I know. Your eyes lit up when I said that. It was just like, oh, really? Mr. Faber. Oh,
nothing gets folks more hot and bothered than William Hartnell.
Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
I was going with the whole monkey's going to strap me down, but that's okay.
Exactly. You know, those are Seattle days. That's okay.
I didn't know I was supposed to come on and behave myself.
You are. This is a Doctor Who podcast. We're a little more family. Okay, a little more family friendly on this one. So
I'll be good.
Okay. Oh, oh yeah, sure. That's what you said before you went into the geek seat. But anyway, it's great to have you back up here. And you picked 42. Tell me about why you picked 42.
So I feel like 42 is this terrific episode that kind of gets lost in the shadow of the three episodes that follow it in that season. Because what's it followed by? It's followed by Human Nature, Family Blood, and Blink.
Oh, sure.
And once those three episodes hit the airwaves, everybody forgot about 42. But 42, from my perspective, is great storytelling in terms of the mechanics it employs to create tension. It's great storytelling in terms of character. The relationship between the Doctor and Martha moves forward in a pretty significant way in this episode. And the characters that they meet when they land on the ship become really interesting people. We get to know them in really substantial ways in a very short amount of time. And they very quickly become distinctive individual people who we care about by the end of that episode. And so that's where my attachment to this episode comes from. It's far more substantial than people give it credit for, because it's followed by three high points of the David Tennant era.
Very true. Very, very true. And it's interesting that you had the Tennant era, and, you know, Martha was always, you know, they never fulfilled what they needed to with Martha. I always felt like it always felt like Martha was, you know, she was the rebound girlfriend, and we always kind of felt sorry for her because Tennant was still always pining over Rose at this point still. And Martha was really interested in the Doctor and everything. And she was still getting her feet, because even in this episode, this is the, you know, the Doctor at the very beginning of it, fixes her telephone that she can call anywhere in the universe, basically, as long as she has the area code, as the Doctor said.
Right. So my feeling about this episode is that it marks a turning point in the Doctor's grieving process for Rose. And I think that because the episode starts with him adjusting her phone, the way you talked about, and it ends with him giving her the key to the TARDIS. And he gives her the key to the TARDIS because of what they go through in this episode. From a character relationship standpoint, this episode is huge for the two of them. Because he sees her as a companion very shortly into the season. But this episode, he reveals a piece of himself that he hadn't really revealed to her before.
No, very much so.
He gets to that scene toward the end of the episode where he's taken in the consciousness of the sun, and he says to her, "I'm scared. I'm so scared." And she tells him, "You're going to be okay. We're going to make this happen. We're going to get through this." And he comes to the very edge of telling her about regeneration. He doesn't, but the fact he trusts her enough go there to admit his fear, which is not something the Doctor talks about very much, to go that far with somebody that he's still just getting to know is a big deal from my perspective.
No, I totally understand that. And let's add in Mike and Mary to the conversation. Did you guys see this when it first aired, or did you guys come upon it later?
Oh yeah. That's at this point I was watching it as it aired. I mean, I couldn't get enough. At this point in New Who, I couldn't see episodes fast enough. Like when they were out, I watched them as soon as I could.
What about you, Mary?
Yeah, I came upon it later because I didn't really start watching Doctor Who until Matt Smith. And then I went back and I binge watched everything I could get my hands on. And I was just thinking about, you know, looking back on it from what Jana said, that this is actually a nice lead in to human nature. Because yeah. The Doctor is showing a kind of vulnerability here that, that gets even more pronounced in the next episodes.
Well, exactly. You know, in the next episode, the Doctor puts all his trust in Martha, you know, with the fob watch and with everything like that, and, you know, becoming human, you know, and he gave her a set of rules that, you know, you're basically my protector because I won't have a clue what's going on. And that's what made that episode so great. But I could definitely see it building in this story.
Yeah. And it's really interesting what, like to your point, like I can definitely see that, like in the scene where, in the sequence where he's trying to save Martha in the escape pod, I don't get the feeling that he's trying to save Martha at all. He's trying to save Rose. He's looking back at what happened with Rose, and he doesn't want that to happen again. He's not going to lose another companion. And I see that as like, this is his chance at a do-over, if you will. And I don't think it's until later, till she comes through for him, that's when he sort of acknowledges her. Cause I think at that point, like throughout the first half, she's just kind of a body that's there. As opposed to somebody that he really, really trusts and cares about.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's really interesting. It hadn't occurred to me that this was him working out that trauma, but I think you have a really good point. Mm-hmm. And I think when he says to her about the phone frequent flyers privilege, he's not necessarily thinking about her being on the TARDIS long term. When he gives her a key, that's when you know mm-hmm. that the shift has occurred. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, he sacrifices everything to save, and in an impossible situation. I mean, it really looks like, I mean, I had forgotten, to be honest with you, because your point is valid. I love this season. I'm a big Martha fan. But this episode is like a hidden gem for me, actually, because I was like, oh, yeah, I'd really forgotten about this one and how much is going on here. And that scene in particular just tears me up because it really looks like, I'm like, how does he save Martha here? I'm like, this is awful. Like I'd really forgotten all that.
Yeah. Let's not think too hard about the physics of this story because
the script yeah. is nonsense. The story is nonsense and it doesn't make it like it's a Chibnall script. And it really like, it brings all of that in there. Like it doesn't, there's a lot of stuff that just makes no sense whatsoever. But you know, but as you pointed out, the characters are there, the work is there, and the acting, particularly by David, is just phenomenal.
Oh, extremely so. It was very heavily David. This almost felt like this could have almost been a play on stage, the way this was done. You know,
that has a lot to do with the direction too.
Oh, of course,
so well stellar. Yes. Graham Absolutely. Harper, I think, was the director here and just a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It felt very smooth. There wasn't any lull in the story, hence the name for 42, because that was the countdown on the clock where it started. And not that it was quite real time, but it was fairly close.
Well, that's the thing. I was actually watching the clock while I was watching the episode last night. The action starts at a minute 35 seconds. That's when the drama begins. The episode is what, 45 minutes long? There is no breathing time. And it's a classic storytelling method to build tension. You set a clock going, you set a deadline, and you've got to make it. And that's where the suspense occurs. It's classic, and it's well executed. From that perspective, you can't breathe. I mean, I remember watching this the very first time I saw it, and I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. Yes, that's what I wanted to say.
I feel like there's a lot of Martha growth here. It's like I actually found myself really paying a lot of attention to Martha. I almost couldn't take my eyes off her because she's really good. in this episode, and she just keeps getting, she keeps getting better. She keeps, it's almost like she's coming into her own. Like she, you know, she kind of has to decide, I'm either going to step up or I'm going to fade into the background. And she does not fade at all.
Oh, no,
she steps right up.
She runs. Oh, right. She's, it, like, what I have to do, this is what I'm going to do.
And that's the great thing, because there are some really bad stories right before this one. And you had the two Daleks in Manhattan stories. And oh, that, yeah. And then the other one, I don't even remember what it was called, the that had the mutant, the guy who was transforming into this mutant or something like
yeah,
that.
Lazarus Experiment.
Lazarus Experiment. That's what it. And yeah, it was just not a good couple of stories right there. But
yeah, it was kind of bumpy.
Yeah. But this one, I agree completely. Martha came into her own in this one. And I thought Freema did a great, great job in this. And she could, when she was on the escape pod, the scene where you see her pulling away and her like almost like on the window, your heart's breaking for her at that point. That's like,
oh, yeah. I think the thing about that scene that got me was her calling her mother. And trying to have a conversation with mom, knowing that this could be it.
Oh yeah, and of course.
Trying not to put it on her mom, just to hear her mother's voice, let her know that she loved her. I mean, that really got me choked up. Admittedly, I may have mommy issues. I lost my parents very young. So I see a story like that. I see a scene like that, and it really speaks to my heart. And I thought Freema did a wonderful, wonderful job with it. And it's really tough. I mean, they shot her super up close. They shot the actress who plays her mother super up close. There was no escaping that camera. It was merciless.
It made me remember, though, how much I hated her mother in the series. I despised it. You know, I thought I didn't like Jackie with Rose. I hated Martha's mom even more. Maybe I have mother issues also. I don't know. But it was really interesting to see the dynamic and, you know, the whole thing. You know, they were putting the subplots of the whole Saxton story for the end of the season into this.
That's right.
Yeah.
And everything. But
I will say one thing about Martha's mother is I thought the actress played it well in that scene where Martha's calling her because Martha thinks she's going to die, because her mother till then has been this just really hard-edged, very stoic, you know, this judgmental facade, and she starts to break a little bit in that moment because she's figured out something's going on.
She hears the fear and knows one of her children is in danger. That should be what any mother should
do. Well, don't forget that the first time she calls, it ends with a blood-curdling scream. Like, so, I mean, like the next time she calls, it's like, oh, what the heck was going, like there is like the sense of danger was already there. But
true.
That is absolutely true.
But to your point, yeah. I mean, the fact that she, that whole, like a mother knows thing, you know, right.
You know, what really freaked me out the most about this episode watching it was that it came out, ready for this, folks, 2007.
Oh, yeah. I know. Talk about time flying.
I know. 13 years, folks.
13 years ago.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just like, why? What?
How did that happen?
Exactly. Where did these gray hairs come from? I don't know who that person in the mirror is.
I mean, haven't we lived 13 years in just the last month or so?
What do you mean the last week?
Although watching it, I was, watching the opening credits and all that, I was like, man, it just feels like a million years ago.
It's a totally different feel, isn't it?
It really
made me very nostalgic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't help but, you know, and I'm not usually a guy that likes to compare, but I couldn't help but like a couple times, like, especially since it's a Chibnall episode, to just keep going like, oh yeah, they don't do that anymore. You know, or oh, that's not as good now, and yeah. You know, like that kind of thing, like oh, longing for the days, and that was just 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm. That's how scary it is. It's like, you know, we're going to be at the point where it's going to be from us to that episode to the old series. It's almost
Stop that. You're going to break my head.
Don't do that.
Wibbly wobbly timey. But yeah, it was good. It was neat to see. This is David in his prime. It is truly, he is just awesome.
Yes.
He is so comfortable at being the doctor. And
he really inhabits the character in this episode in a very visceral way.
Right. No, very much so. And this is not, with the spacesuit, it isn't the same spacesuit he had in the Satan pit, was it?
It is the same
one. It is. Yes.
It is.
I mean, it's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
I mean, in the story, it's not. But in actuality, they just took it and repainted it.
I think they made it a little darker or something like
that. Yeah,
the infamous orange.
Spacesuit. Every time he gets into the spacesuit, though, I just go, man, is he thin.
Yes, exactly what I was thinking. I was going to say, you look at him and it's like, he is one skin drink of water, this guy. Well, no meat on him.
None.
I used to love when Donna used to make fun of him before. You know, you're a little too skinny for me. And everything. Yeah, David Tennant is just like, here, give him a sandwich. He's starving. My grandmother would have a field day with him.
Darling, here, have a sandwich.
Eat. Have a sandwich. Eat. Have some soup. You look like you're starving.
Yeah, it's exactly right.
No, exactly.
That is hilarious.
And that's the great thing about Tennant as the doctor, though. It's just like him as the doctor, you think he can do anything. And everything. He doesn't play, you know, he plays it lighthearted, but then he gets very serious, not like scary serious, like when Matt Smith used to, because that was just scary when Matt Smith, you know, turned dark. Tennant's dark was different.
Tennant's dark was different, but it was no less impressive or intimidating. I used to watch him furrow his brow, and I would think to myself, man, he looks like a thundercloud about to just burst. You know, when that eyebrow curls, when his forehead kind of gets that tightened up look, he's going to bring it. He's about to bring it. And there's no messing with him.
And because he's like, bouncing around from, you know, being frivolous almost to all of a sudden deadly serious. And every time he does it's completely earned. It doesn't feel like it's like out of character or anything like that. It's just who he is. But it's like, I mean, at the end, when they get back on the TARDIS and, you know, Martha's had that hot kiss and she's like, oh, I'm really kind of like enjoying this thing. And he just looks at her like his like Gallifrey died again. Like, it's just like where did that come from? And it's just like, yeah, it's just this cold, devastating look that I don't know if any of the other actors, like I've you know, and this is not to slight anybody, but I just marvel at David's talent. I say that he's the best actor that's ever played the Doctor. And I don't mean that in, like I said, to dismiss anybody else, but with the stuff I see David do, it just is way above anybody else.
I also really like the moment where he's so desperate at the end, where he's almost helpless, and he doesn't know what to do. And you actually don't see that a lot with the Doctor. No. But
he's also burning up inside at that.
Yeah, point. He's desperate.
Yeah, he's and like he plays that so
well.
Like,
well, here's a quick question with that though: if he would have burnt up and such, you know, would he have regenerated at that point?
Well, he there's a moment when he almost broaches the subject, and Martha, thinking he's saying goodbye, says to him, stops him from talking about death, right? What she thinks is death and what he thinks is regeneration. So I got the impression that maybe he would have regenerated at that point. I could be wrong.
I don't know. It depends. I mean, it all depends on who's writing the script, right? Because I think we're led to believe that there are some things that could just wipe him out. Like, and certainly if he was just going to be a burnt stain on the wall like the rest of them, like that, he wouldn't be able to regenerate from that.
Well, falling into the sun probably would have done it.
What did you guys think of the supporting cast in this? What do you think of the folks on the ship?
And I've always, the Russell T. Davies era, and you can see this in Classic Who too, so I don't want to give Russell too much credit, but he always manages to cast these stories with people that do the work. And every character feels like they've got a backstory. There's so many times where you're watching something, even as significant, like this story, like in the grand scheme of things, is not really that big of a deal. But yet there are certain people that you care about and you learn to care about in the span of like 40 minutes. And even so much so that you're like, wow, I could see that person becoming a companion. Like it just, they're just so solid. And that's another thing that I kind of like, again, I don't want to keep harping on it, but I don't see that happening as often now.
What about Graham though? Come on.
You mean Graham Harper who directed this?
Yeah, exactly. Of course.
Yeah. I mean, I felt that way too. It was so refreshing to feel the secondary characters as real people. I mean, they really, and they didn't, you didn't even learn that much concrete about them, but you learned enough and the acting was good enough that you just, I mean, you felt it when they became stains on the wall or when they got punched out of airlocks. It was, you know, it meant something.
Mm-hmm. See, for me, the fact that the actors inhabited these characters so thoroughly that you felt like they had backstories, even when we didn't get a lot of information, spoke a lot to not just the quality of the direction or the acting, but to a certain extent, what was in the script. I mean, for me, one of the most impactful scenes in the episode is when the captain pulls her husband into the airlock and they go out the airlock together and you see them float away into space. It's devastating because we've gotten to know her. She's realized what she's done. She's taken responsibility for it. She's lost her husband as a result. And she makes the ultimate sacrifice to save those members of her crew who are out. And she's taken her husband, who's gone. There's a strange element of romance about it, but romance in the classic sense, not that it's romantic, but it's almost an epic end for her character. You know, she goes through a character arc in this episode, from doing what she's supposed to do, trying to get her business done, to realizing the crime she's committed, to realizing the cost of that crime, to paying the price for it.
The ultimate price, truthfully.
Yeah. And the it's the only quiet moment in the episode when you see them just floating in space.
In that final embrace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's really something.
Frozen and then soon to be part of the sun.
Yep. That's really, to me, that is some really remarkable, it's remarkable writing and it's remarkable direction. Because as Mary said, it's the one quiet moment in the whole episode. It's the end of these two characters and the shot of their silhouette against the sun, the silhouette of the victim of her crime. Pretty profound. I mean, maybe I'm making too much of a TV show, right? But I feel like that scene is just kind of epic.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was interesting though that, you know, when the guy transformed, you know, got possessed by the sun, whatever you want to call it, and he put the helmet on and then he burnt the woman, actually he killed
the doctor,
but then also the other mechanic or whatever on the ship, he killed the two women, but then he grabbed the guy and transformed him also. Wasn't that kind of sexist?
There is a certain amount of gender, there is a gender issue there, right? The women were both smaller than him. The men were of the same height, about the same size. The medical attendant that he first kills is the character's name is Abby Lerner. And the other character is named Irina Les. And I don't know what her role on the ship was. I don't know what her...
I'm not sure they ever really told us.
Red shirt number two.
Yeah, kind of. But she did have a name. Unlike most red shirts, she did have a name. She was Irina.
She was complaining that the mechanic was telling her what to do. So I guess that she was some sort of assistant in some sort of assistant role. Because mm-hmm. she was doing everything from, grabbing equipment to getting tea for these guys or whatever, right?
So, yeah, she was kind of a dog's body.
Yeah, so...
Lerner was the medic. She was kind of the assistant mechanic. And it wasn't super clear what anybody else's roles on the ship were except for the captain.
Mm-hmm. No, everyone else was pretty much...
Yeah, they all seem like mechanic guys, basically.
crew member one, crew member two, crew
yeah.
member three.
And, right.
And this was still... very old Who feel with Base Under Siege type feel.
Oh yeah. Another reason that this one probably gets overlooked is because in David's time as the Doctor, you have a very similar setup with the Satan Pit two-parter, as well as afterwards with the special, with the Mars special, right? Waters of Mars. It's just like he goes and he's on this base or he's on this ship and he's in a closed environment with a crew, and it works really well. But you kind of, after a while, if you watch all three of these, you probably are going to come out going, okay, now which one was the one, where they had to unlock the doors for stuff they did on trivia night or whatever, which doesn't make any sense to me at all. But anyway, so I think that's another reason why this one kind of gets lumped in that way, because it's probably not as memorable as those two, but yet it's got very much of a similar environment to it.
But again, this was the last episode before Human Nature, Family of Blood and Blink. And when you have those three episodes back to back, a lot of what before just gets lost.
Well, yeah. I mean, arguably the three best episodes that ever have been produced by Doctor Who, in my opinion.
I'm not complaining on that one. I'm not disagreeing at all. And that's pretty awesome. But this one, I think, is a very strong episode. I thought it moves. It's interesting. The Living Sun was kind of dorky, but I think that's the weakest part about it. Otherwise, I thought it was really fun.
Yeah, I love the fact that the title kind of takes on three meanings. Obviously, it's a reference to Douglas Adams, former writer and story editor for Doctor Who. It also is sort of a numerical flip on the show 24, which was in real time. And then of course, the 42 minutes that are supposed to ally with this. It's just sort of so you've got this sort of all this meaning just in the title, which is kind of...
I completely agree.
That's cool.
Nice catch there, Mike.
Very good catch.
And this was Chris Chibnall's first episode.
Yeah. Doctor Who, maybe his best.
It was
one of his best. One.
I mean, we never know especially in these days. And the same thing goes for Moffat too. When this time, when they're writing the scripts, obviously, Davies is taking a pass at these, and maybe other people are too. We just don't know. So we don't know how much is really them, definitely.
RTD was famous for rewriting everybody's scripts.
Yeah, and I can see, actually watching this, I was kind of in my head, now that we've seen Chibnall sort of unleashed, I can sort of see in my head I can see where this would be a Chibnall story, and there's a lot of stuff here that's kind of nonsense, but then RTD comes in and goes, okay, let's have some more character development here. Let's do this here. Let's have this moment here. And the overall story arc that's going on, we gotta play that out. So I could see where some, it just improved the episode greatly. I, I, Now, I just, who knows? It could be that that wasn't the case, but it just feels that way to me.
I could see that. Definitely. So we've been talking about this for a little bit, and any final thoughts before we go ahead and rate? Because I know, Jenna, you took tons of notes. Did we?
I did. There's just two things. We kind of hit most. Well, we've hit a couple. We've hit most of the points that I made notes about. But a couple of the other things that I found myself thinking about was that, in some respects, this episode's reflect the absolute best values that Doctor Who always that Doctor Who portrays. There's loyalty, honesty, self-sacrifice. This is all classic Who. And it also continues the theme of the effects that becoming a companion has, not just on the companion herself, but also her family, right? And my impression is that that was an innovation in New Who, that you didn't really get that in classic Who, but New Who really stops to say, hey, wait a minute, people don't live in vacuums. People have families, and their disappearance will affect those people just as profoundly as companions' travels with the Doctor will affect them. And I think that's really important. I think that's a sign of good storytelling. It's a way to round out these characters and their lives. They come into these stories with their own experiences and their own perspectives. And there were two lines in this episode that I noted down because they have stuck with me for years. The first one is, don't they teach recreational mathematics anymore? I remember bursting into laughter the first time I heard that because I always struggled with math. And I'm like, there is nothing about math fun. Stop that. You know? The other one is the creepiest line in Doctor Who for a long time for me was, burn with me. Just this whole concept just kind of weirded me out.
Yeah,
and
I could see that.
That voice effect is great.
Well, if you think about it, it's, you had that, and then what, three episodes later, don't blink, whatever you do.
Yep.
So pretty, you know, iconic stuff there. All right, let's go ahead and rate this episode. 1 out of 5 TARDISes, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. Jenna, this is your episode. Go ahead. Ladies first.
3.75.
Wow. Okay. That's totally fair.
Okay.
All right. Mary.
You know, this episode surprised me because I'm going to be honest. I went into it with low expectations because I didn't remember it very well. And I haven't been a huge fan of Chris Chibnall. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, it really drew me in. So I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay. Mr. Mike.
Yeah, I had forgotten this one as well, and that's shame on me. But I am glad that this was selected. Thank you for selecting this one, because it was a breath, like it was like oh yeah, forgotten, like a lost episode in my head, you know. And I hope not anymore, because it really made an impression on me this time. And it just reminded me of, like, man, this show could be so good. I want to give it more than a 4, but I don't want to overdo it. And I think I'm thinking that just because of all the stuff that I've seen lately with Doctor Who, it's like, well, this is way better.
Mike, honestly, that's why I gave it a 3.75 instead of a 4. I mean, I love this episode, but I couldn't go all the way to 4 because there are episodes that I think are at that level that this doesn't quite reach, even though I love this episode. That's why I said 3.75.
Yeah. Well, in my head, you got 3 5s in a row coming. So yeah, I'll be comfortable enough and just settle for a 4 on this one, but damn, it's a good 4.
Yeah, it's
yeah. Before. Then you also have to remember we also have Dobby Doctor coming too at this point.
Don't remind us about that.
Sorry.
Yeah, I know. When they start talking about Sax vote Saxton, I was like, ugh. Oh,
I know. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna give this a 3.5. I enjoyed it. I liked it. But you know, compared to what's coming, I think it is a 3.5. And I love that we got to do it all together. And it's one I haven't seen in 10 years. So it was great going back down there. And it was a lot better than I remembered. I was like going, oh, this is probably just a 3 at the most. And I actually enjoyed it. And I loved seeing the chemistry between Freema and David was awesome. It was just great. And I just thought, damn, I wish she was on the series longer than just a season and everything. But, you know, and why the hell did they end up put her with Mickey? Come on.
You know. After she's done with this, it's like the character goes.
She was decent in Torchwood. And then I also enjoyed her in that Santarin story that she came back for when she was working for UNIT.
Yeah, I mean, there were some points where it wasn't bad, but not the same.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain. But, you know, we got a good companion out of it. And I was, you know, to follow up from Rose, I thought it was great, you know.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, that lamppost probably would be fairly better too. But that's a whole different story for another episode. So we definitely would love to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at earthstationwho@esonetwork.com. We would definitely love to hear what your guys' thoughts are on this and everything. We did receive an email on the podcast. And real quickly, I did want to thank Andrew Craig for writing us. We're not going to read the email because we'd be here for the next 4 hours if, you know, we read the whole thing. Andrew, thank you so much for writing us. And please, at home, you know, be like Andrew. Write us. We definitely would love to hear from you guys. Tell us, what did you guys think of Graham? Or what did you think of 42? We definitely would love to, you know, hear from you guys. And, you know, we definitely would like to hear what you guys thought, what you guys want us to talk about. We've got a long time coming, folks, till Doctor Who's back. So we've got a lot of space to fill. So if you want to come on the show, talk about your favorite one of your favorite episodes, like Jana did tonight, or if you want to just tell us what you'd like to hear us. Would you want to hear more Graham episodes? We could do that. You know,
gladly.
Yeah, exactly. We'd love to talk more about Graham.
So.
Yeah,
can't wait to talk about Graham.
Sign me up.
Oh, you know, I know these two are just ready and going. So, you know, if you want to hear that, please put me through that. Please, I really want to. So, we definitely would love to hear from you guys. And you know, we got some other little bit of news. We were scheduled to be at Concaster Burris in Huntsville, Alabama, the first week of June. And because of everything that's going on in the world right now, Con K has been put on hold till October. So right now, Con K is going to be the 10th and 11th of October. And it's still, as of right now, going to be the same guests and the same people who've bought their tickets already will still all be accepted. Check out the Facebook page for Concaster Burris, or you could also check out their website. Last time I checked, though, sadly enough, their site had been hacked. So they're working on it. I talked to Matthew the other day. But definitely, Concaster Burris is pretty much the only Doctor Who con in the Deep South right now. And folks, it's definitely worth checking out. Bonnie and Matthew and their crew put on a great, great show. This would be our 5th year, Mikey, going?
If we go? Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, and it should be pointed out, too, that we will have Earth Station Who will have a presence there.
Oh, yeah. We're definitely going to be there. We're already planning at least one member of the podcast to be there, maybe two. We're still working out logistics because October is a long way away and you don't know what could happen before then, as we're finding out nowadays. So definitely please, you know, check out, you know, Concaster Burrs. They could use our support and definitely would love to, you know, do it. Some people might actually have a 3-day weekend that weekend because that also is Columbus Day weekend. So some places have the Monday off.
Do we want to talk about the short stories?
So if you get a chance, Huntsville is only 3-hour ride from Atlanta. It's like 2 hours from Nashville. And, you know, it's not that far from anywhere else in the South. And it's a great, great city. And NASA is there. They have a great space center, folks. What, Mike's been there, what, 5-6 times, and you have yet to be to the Space Center?
It looks cool. Going by it, though.
Exactly. It's pretty darn awesome. So if you ever get a chance, go to Huntsville, you know, brought to you by the Huntsville Board of Tourism, courtesy of the Earth Station Who podcast. So we definitely would love to, you know, see you guys there. And, you know, it's always fun just talking Doctor Who with folks. But, you know, it's just not Doctor Who, too. They also do have other programming, too. So I know Catherine Tate was the head guest they had for this year. Right now, she is still scheduled. And so it should be pretty cool. And so the master is going to be there, too, Eric Roberts. So it should be, you know, they've got a great bunch of guests. So, you know, Doctor Who and Concaster Burrs, they go like this. It's pretty awesome. So with that, did I miss anything that we had to talk about otherwise, folks?
Nothing I can think of.
Okay.
Are we going to mention the short stories?
The short stories. That's right. Thank you. See, this is great having Jenna here. So we definitely want to also let you know, we all have a lot of free time on our hands. So I know Chris Chibnall has put out a new 13th Doctor short story. So that is out. And we'll have a link to it up in our show notes. But Stephen Moffat has written his first, that's right, his first 13th Doctor short story. So the Moffat is back already. That's right, folks. Maybe good times are ahead for us. As long as he writes Graham into the story, we're okay, right?
Well, no spoilers, but it is a terrific story.
That is awesome. I'm glad
I read it last night. It's great.
So awesome. And definitely, we'll have links to it up on our show notes, so you'll be able to check that out. Our friends at Big Finish are having huge, huge sales on their audio adventures. And as a way of saying thank you to all their fans for everything over the years, a way of making it through, they actually have given one of their adventures away for free. If you have a Big Finish account, which is free to have, you can download a War Doctor story for free. And it's pretty darn awesome, folks. I don't know how many weeks this is going to go on for because they have sales coming on and off. I don't know if it's for the month or if it's just for the week, but definitely check out Big Finish. They have some amazing things. They have a lot of Eighth Doctor stories also on sale right now. So definitely could check out that. So should be kind of fun to do. So that also will be in our show notes. Let's thank our crew for being here this week. Of course, Jenna, you made it through your first Doctor Who episode with us.
And I had a blast. Thank you so much for having me on. I hope I can come back.
We'll see. We'll look it into our contract and everything, you know. You know, we'll have to see if, you know, we have the 90-day rule, you know, type thing. But, you know, we have a lot of time to fill, so I'm sure you'll be back. So it would be cool. So it would be cool to do that. And, of course, let's thank our regulars. Mr. Mike Gordon, thank you so much, as always.
As always, it's my pleasure.
And Ms. Mary, thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me. And thank you, Jenna, for picking such a great episode to talk about. It was really fun to go back and revisit that one.
Is there anything you want to promote, Mary?
You can find my artwork at maryogle.com or on Etsy at eVision Arts.
Awesomeness. Yeah, folks, definitely worth checking out her stuff. She puts out some amazing artwork. And like everyone these days, this is how she makes a living. This is how she, you know, needs to get some money. You know, please help local small businesses. This is, you know, it's crazy hearing how many stores and businesses are going away permanently now. And some, you know, right now we're in a really bad period and some things are not coming back. it's going to be very scary to see what comes back and what does. So with that, you know, let's talk about happier things. We are going to be back again next time. And we have some amazing things to talk about. We got some good stuff lined up for you guys, folks. We are going to be talking all about next time, the Gunfighters. We're going back to the First Doctor era, including singing companions. Okay. So we're going back to the First Doctor. Oh, no, you do not want to hear me sing. It'll be very interesting to do. And until then, on behalf of myself, Mike Gordon, Mary Ogle, and Jenna Silverstein, thank you so, so much, folks. We'll see you here next time on First Station Who. Peace. And we are done. Wow.
Woohoo! You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talent from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
Hey, weird podcast people! Join us every week on the Flopcast for a half hour or so of silly conversation about comics, music, Saturday morning cartoons, old movies and TV shows, and chickens. It'll be our little secret. Find us at flopcast.net and on the ESO network.
Are we all going to talk about 42 or?
No, just you.
Oh, just okay.
Yeah, we're here just to watch you.
we're just watching and judging.
We're judging. See how much you know. Consider this an audition, you could say. No. See if we even let you on another episode. No.
We'll fine be that way.
All right, let's get started. 3, 2.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.